Howdy. A brief harmonica opening, which tells you where I'm at, but it is December the 23rd, 2018, Sunday afternoon, kind of quiet. Not too gloomy, but it is Seattle in December, so the sun is already disappearing. I received some contact from someone I interact with online. They had sent me an essay concerning reality. I don't want to say much more about that because I try to protect people in that sense, and this person has a right to their privacy. And I was reading this person's essay, and it struck me that, well, at least I'm not that alone. Because I operate these days under the assumption that whether it's the grocery store or some TV show or even a church, that there are probably agendas at play, probably people even not fully understanding themselves, parroting and projecting and disseminating what can only be called lies. And, you know, if reality has a definition, and I'm not sure what the best definition of reality is, but if reality has a definition, it should be seen as a state of awareness where most, if not all, the lies are removed, and where at least we understand where the truth is and where the falsehoods are. Of course, that's ideal. And that's not taking into consideration all the weaknesses of the human personality. That's not taking into consideration biological limits of perception. You know, how well do our eyes work? How well do our ears work? How well does our brain work vis-a-vis experience? A lot of people have the sensation these days that they're being lied to, that the information they're being fed, I think fed's a good word because it does seem like a feeding process, but the information they're being fed is distorted. But how do you get through that? And I personally haven't figured out a way yet. I don't know that alternative media is the answer. I try my best to have faith that maybe somewhere on the internet there are people who are making an honest attempt at revealing the truth. But even if this is the case, I have no means by which to adjudicate. What I am certain of is that there's some strange things going on. When I was a kid, for example, I did not remember as many people as a kid or even as a young adult, even just as a young person in my 20s back in the 90s. I don't remember as many people getting cancer, as many children having autism. This is anecdotal, of course, but it was just one of those things. If a kid was born with autism, it seemed like a relatively rare thing. And I know this seems like a bit of a tangent off of the question of reality, but it's really not. Cancer, autism, psychological issues, any number of things are operating on us these days, you know, not the least of which is diabetes and the quality of our food. All of these things operate in such a way that someone would ask the question, well, Dan, let's say there was an agenda to give people cancer and to spread autism and to spread Alzheimer's and all of these other diseases that seem so horrible and incapacitating. What would be its purpose? And if you approach this issue as someone who has a moral compass, you probably don't see the purpose. But if you can shut down your moral compass for a second and see this from a strategic perspective, it actually makes a lot of sense. One of the first things I learned, one of the first, you know, interesting tactical, strategic, operational concepts I learned when I was training to be an officer in the United States military, was this notion of using wounded people. Of course, it sounds horrible, but the fact is, it is far more destructive, and both in terms of morale and resources, towards an enemy, to wound rather than kill. I'm not saying that weapons are not designed to kill or that armies don't kill. They do. But that wounding an enemy, leaving wounded on the battlefield, actually has huge tactical, operational, and strategic advantages. It creates turmoil. It requires that other soldiers, instead of actually fighting in combat, are required to care for the wounded. There's an entire infrastructure that is required to support the existence of wounded. And this doesn't even get into the issues of moral impact when wounded return home. You know, one of the things that people have remarked on during the War on Terror is that though there have been many deaths, and I don't know what the deaths are up to now, I think between Afghanistan, Iraq, and all the other theaters, I think we're still shy of 20,000 dead, but we might be over that number. I think a number of years ago, I think the number was closer to 10,000. It could be less than that. Truthfully, I think a lot of this is cloaked in a lot of mystery, how many casualties there have been during the wars on terror. But let's assume it's 10 to 15,000. That's a much smaller number than Vietnam. Vietnam total deaths, I think, of American soldiers was closer to, you know, I think 45, 50,000, maybe even higher, depending upon how you calculate that. Korea, I mean, there were tens of thousands of Americans dead during the first year of the Korean War. So, yeah, I don't know the actual number. In fact, I'm curious to look it up. Not that I'm going to trust the answer. I hate when I do this because I really think I'll get an answer that I probably won't trust. Number of dead U.S. soldiers. Iraq and Afghanistan. Okay, so actually the total deaths as of June 29, 2016 was less than 5,000 with almost 32,000 wounded. So it's according to the Army or the U.S. government or whatever, much less than even the estimate I gave of 10 or 15. So it's like 5,000, less than 5,000 total deaths. But the wounded is interesting. It's around 32,000. And again, this is data as of 2016, and this is the United States Department of Defense, probably not a great source of truth, if I may be so blunt, having worked for those fuckers. Truth is not something that's high on their list of values. Whatever their values might be, truth is not one of them. So actually, this is an interesting number. And if you think about the war on terror, there has been a lot of effort put into dealing with wounded in action because, again, that's where a huge bulk of the negative feedback from our society has come in soldiers coming home. And it's not just the physically wounded. It's the psychologically wounded. The bottom line is that wounded on the battlefield are actually incredibly useful. And so when you think about something like cancer, you know, or autism, or Alzheimer's, or even the question of whether or not our government and other governments are using aerosols and particulates and other types of materials in the atmosphere to control the weather, whether or not they're doing that, I have no fucking clue. But let's assume they're spraying shit in the atmosphere. A lot of the stuff they talk about, barium salts, aluminum salts, these things are not good for people. So, you know, I can see the value if I'm an incredibly evil person, if I'm a terrible person, I can see the tactical, operational, strategic value of creating a society of people who are constantly in a wounded state. And if you add to that all of the non-physical, psychological, mental issues, especially those issues that I think of as being really non-issues, if only for statistical reasons, and that's the whole emergence of the sexual gender, I don't know what to call it, the sexual gender hysteria. You know, this issue of being trans or not trans and what people's genders are. These are non-issues. These issues only serve to inflame wounds, okay? There are a lot of people, I don't know the number, but when I say a lot, there's probably more than a few people who legitimately, for whatever psychological or genetic reason, believe that their birth gender is wrong. But in no way could this possibly represent the preponderance of the human population. That would be bizarre. it would actually be ascientific, it would be illogical, and it would go against any reasonable set of assumptions when it comes to whether or not a species is capable of survival. Okay? Whatever opinions we might have about, you know, homosexuality, gay, lesbian, whatever, the bottom line is, as a percentage of the whole population, it wouldn't make very much sense logically if it were more than just a small fraction. But yet, the entire, like, homosexual agenda, whatever the fuck that means to you, and I don't give a fuck, okay? I'm not gay. I don't spend a lot of time hating gay people. I simply don't give a shit. If you're gay, that's great. What you do in the privacy of your own fucking home is your own fucking business. I do not care. If you have a parade where you walk around swinging your genitals about, I don't care if you're gay or straight. If you have a parade in public where you're acting like a buffoon, like a drunk chimpanzee, and you're swinging your genitals about, I'm probably not going to be a huge fan. I'll probably wonder what the purpose of the fucking thing is. But by the same token, I can choose to walk away from it. I don't have to participate. Okay? What is sad is the level at which this particular propaganda campaign is being directed at young people and creating confusion for people, for young people, for people who are just barely out of puberty about their sexuality, when in fact, being young and dealing with sexuality is confusing enough. Like, you don't actually have to add confusion to sexuality. It is fucking confusing as hell. And this entire agenda, it seems to not at all be helping. It is simply making it worse. So when I look at this stuff, I don't see a lot of random acts of you know, evil. Like there's a bunch of crazy people in a room someplace saying, let's you know, make more autistic kids. Let's get young people more confused about their gender so they're spending time thinking about that and not about whether or not, you know, their bodies are being toxified from above. All of this makes very little sense unless you see it from the perspective of leaving wounded on the battlefield, leaving people so confused, so obsessed about both real and make-believe illnesses that they don't even spend time asking themselves, what's happening to my freedom of speech? What's happening to my dignity as a human being? What's happening in a world where the richest and most powerful people, more or less, automatically get a get-out-of-jail-free card? They get helped. If they go bankrupt, they get help. If they run a business into the ground, they get help. If they risk the entire financial framework of the world economy, like in 2008, and frankly, probably we're going to see a bit of that, you know, in the next few months, these rich and powerful people will get all the help they need, and ordinary people get screwed. But if you have ordinary people obsessed with cancer and autism and ADHD and diabetes and all of these diseases that, in my opinion, are for the most part avoidable, and that at best would be a background probability, a background level, if not for deliberate action, what you are doing, and I should say what they are doing, is they are limiting our power to take action. We spend our times in cancer walks, we spend our time taking care of kids that can't take care of themselves, and the outcome of that is we're not actually acting as autonomous people capable of changing the world. We're acting as scared people who hope and pray that the beatings will stop. Now, if you see it from the perspective of a minority, and when I say minority, if there are 7 billion people on planet Earth, I'd be surprised if the people that comprise most of the control would fill up a stadium. Like, if there were 50,000 people that more or less controlled the world, that would not surprise me. Now, I'm not saying they're organized. They very well might not be, though it wouldn't surprise me either way, whether they're organized or not. But if you see it from their perspective, and you're one of these 50 or 100,000 people sitting on top of a powder keg called the human race, and for centuries you've sold them this bill of goods called technological progress, and for many of these people, other than that little glowing rectangle, that little dog collar they hold in their hands and they stare at all day, for many people, the evidence of this technological utopia is hard to fucking find. Yes, we've got computers everywhere, and that's great. I mean, you know, for computers and for people who sell them. But for the general health of society, I'm not sure it's actually made things much better. And one of the early arguments during the era of the quote-unquote internet revolution was that it was going to make people smarter. But I gotta tell you, I actually think people are dumber as a result. I think that they're being fed tremendous amounts of disinformation. And frankly, you could say the same thing right now listening to me. You could say, Dan, how do I know you're not either a witting or unwitting disinformation agent? And my only answer to that question is that I don't think I am. I don't have any evidence that I've undergone any type of mind control. I don't have any agenda to lie to you. What I will tell you explicitly is the only thing I'm certain of at this point, that no matter how many news articles I read, no matter how many research papers I review, no matter how many books I take a look at and read, no matter how much information I consume, I find very little of it helps me with the world I'm in right now. I mean, not all of it. I mean, I read the Bible, and I gotta say, I read it, with a little bit of trepidation, just because more often than not, something in the Bible will scream out to me as being pertinent to the world today and not in a particularly good way. But I read the Bible, and there are some sources of information that are helpful, but for the most part, it's an ocean of nonsense. Now, so when you ask the question, what is reality? What I will tell you is reality is what you have time to think about, probably. Reality is what your conscious mind is given the peace and energy to meditate upon. If you spend all day working and you get burnt out and you get home at night and you turn on the TV set, or if you have a family — I don't have a family — but if you have a family and you're dealing with that, and even if it's a normal family, which means you don't have any severe injuries, you don't have any diseases, you're just a normal, quote-unquote, normal family without a lot of challenges in terms of illness, and you have about enough money to get by, even in these cases, there's tremendous amounts of chaos and noise. So I don't see how adults, any adults, actually get very far out of the hole they're in to ask any questions. If they go ahead and ignore their friends who are doing the cancer walk, they're sons of a bitches, right? If you don't like the victim of the week, the victim du jour, there's something wrong with you. It's like, for example, you know, when people talk about things like beheadings, you know, what's up with all these terrible beheadings in places like, you know, Iraq or Saudi Arabia? What's up with ISIS cutting people's heads off? Well, what I try to do is pull them aside and say, listen, if you look at the history of Mexico from the year 2000 up until today, amongst other things, including many thousands of people murdered, you're going to find a lot of fucking beheadings. So if our concern from a rational perspective were to solve the problem of beheadings, who knows? Maybe it makes more sense to start in fucking Mexico. But that's the problem. You start using any type of logic and reason and you've missed the point. It's the victim of the week, whoever the victims might be. The Kurds. The Kurds sound like great people. Maybe they're not great people. I don't know who the fuck they are. They're clearly one of the victims of history, the Kurdish people, okay? I'm going to let you on a little secret. I'm going to distill most of history for you from one perspective. The list of victims of history is a long fucking list. You know, even I, as someone of Irish descent, could claim a kind of fucking, you know, victimhood, victim of history status. So this notion of the Kurds is interesting because it was brought up a number of years ago, like, well, we need to be in Syria because we got to help the Kurds. I don't know. I think that they were useful. I think they were a victim of the week. They were people to be worried about that particular week. It's not to say they're not people or decent people, but the list of people on planet Earth who could use help is a long fucking list, and it actually starts right down the fucking street. Like, you can walk out your door, probably, if you live in a city like me, and walk down the street and find someone that needs your fucking help. But instead, the news tells us to worry about people we don't know. We don't know if the stories are true. And we honestly don't know if these are good people. Like, we get told one version, and then we get told another version. It was like the Contras back in the 80s. The version of the Contra story was they were fighting the evil Sandinistas in Nicaragua. And they were, you know, good guys, you know, true Americans of sorts, you know, believing in freedom and whatnot. That was the propaganda version provided by the Reagan administration and frankly, a lot of news outlets. And then there was the reality that these were crooks and criminals, murderers and drug dealers. Okay? So when people talk about some victim class, some army, some group or ethnicity, some place in the world and say, don't you care about these people? I don't know what to say. Sure, I care about those people. I mean, I guess I care if they're real. But if they're not real, why should I fucking care? Or what's worse, if they're actually despicable people. Like, instead of being people worthy of support and concern and compassion, what if they're actually just a bunch of murdering thieves? So reality, to some extent, for an American these days, is a function of what you have the bandwidth for. If you have, you know, if you have the bandwidth to observe the world around you without being sucked into these artificial worlds, if you actually have the bandwidth to see the life you're living, I don't mean the life other people are living someplace else. I don't mean social fucking media. I mean turn off the technology and walk down the fucking street. Then it's possible that you could see a bit of reality and it might tell you something. What reality tells me mostly these days is that people are so obsessed and so concerned about both real and surreal issues, real issues that threaten their families, issues, like I said, issues involving disease, which is a big one. You know, families struggling with death and illness is a real big thing, and it does. It bogs people down. You know, our family lost two people to cancer in 2010 and 2012. My mom and one of my sisters. And as, you know, as quickly as it happened in both cases, it was a lot of turmoil. So I can't imagine what people do on a daily basis when they're dealing with long-term chronic illness or disease or long-term, you know, handicaps with their children. It's not an easy thing. So how does that person become an active person in their political life or their individual life to defend themselves? How does that person who's taking care of maybe a disabled kid or a spouse with cancer or a parent with Alzheimer's, how does that person actually do anything else other than work and care for one or more people? There may be no plan to this. I mean, it may just be completely random tragedies. And that's the thing about life, actual life, real life. There are random tragedies all the fucking time. But at some point, you look around, you see all the wounded on the battlefield, and you think, wait a minute, you know, if it looks like a bomb went off, and it feels like a bomb went off, maybe a bomb went off. Like, you know, yeah, I see all these people who are just, they're really drowning in a lot of family tragedy that seems as if it's just random, right? And yet it's not. And then you add to that all of the political, philosophical, psychological warfare confusion that gets fed to us on a daily basis about who we think we are and who we should care about. You know, we should care about a caravan of people going from Guatemala to the Mexican border. Why should I care about them? There are poor people. Listen, I was standing at the food bank the other day. I didn't get any food because there was about, it looked like 1,000 Chinese people in front of me. In Little Saigon. Again, I don't care if you're Chinese or not. My point is this food bank seemed overwhelmed and, you know, I'm not exactly going to die of starvation soon. So I decided instead of waiting out in the cold for an hour for maybe getting a rotten onion, I figured I would just pass on that Thursday food bank segment. But that's reality though, you know? So I don't know. This is a bit of a meandering talking about reality and people's lives. I just don't see how people get through this. I mean, it's one of those cases where I don't like the word depression because it's been used as a kind of a political tool. People get called depressed and therefore they're silenced. And boy, that's another topic. Like depression as an illness. Listen, if you look around America today and you have any sense of history at all and you don't get a little depressed, there's something fucking wrong with you. I'm not saying you're not on drugs. You're probably on really good fucking drugs, or you're drunk all the time. Or maybe you're just a sociopath, or maybe you're simply disconnected from reality. But if you actually turn off your fucking phone and walk around and look what's going on around you, I don't know how you wouldn't get sad and depressed a little. And yet, depression, and this is another one of those really fun wounded scenarios, depression becomes a label. Somebody says something that isn't, you know, stellar in its optimism about the economy, well, you must be depressed. Somebody says something negative about the government, well, you must be depressed. Oh, you're talking about chemtrails? You must be depressed. You don't like your job? You think that your work is essentially dehumanizing and turning you into something you don't want to be? Well, there's a drug for that. You're probably depressed. If at the end of the day, I'm going to be told that my honest appraisal of reality is simply a symptom of depression, then yeah, I suppose the answer is fairly straightforward. It's straight out of Huxley, Brave New World. Give people drugs, you know, shape their consciousness the way you want them to be shaped. And this kind of does close this out in a full circle sense. Reality ought to be, should be, the stripping away of anything that separates the truth from understanding or perception. That should be reality. Reality should be the cleanest possible view of what is true. It doesn't mean perfect. It doesn't mean lacking any, you know, obscurations or occultations or clouds. It doesn't mean that things don't get naturally messy sometimes. But all things being equal, reality is the universe. It is nature naked before perception, without propaganda, without lies, without distortion, and frankly, without bias or psychology, although that's difficult to avoid. And if you really want to fuck with people's reality and make them useless to themselves and others, then there is nothing more powerful than leaving wounded on the battlefield. I mean, just leave a bunch of wounded out there. Cancer and Alzheimer's and psychiatric illnesses and all sorts of gender confusion. You put that all into a bouillabaisse and you will reduce most of the population to being incapable of doing anything else but reacting every once in a while. Anyways, this isn't, I don't know, for a pre-Christmas kind of podcast, I'm not really sure this was one I wanted to do. But I hope you guys have a Merry Christmas.